I'd like now to welcome Deborah Madison. She's an acclaimed chef and author of many cookbooks, and Patrick McFarlane, who is an artist, and they are presenting their first collaboration, which is a book called What We Eat When We Eat Alone. Welcome to the Radio Cafe.
Hey, thank you.
And you will be doing a launch of this book on Friday at Garcia Street
yes,
Books.
Yes, we will.
At
5 o'clock, I
at
think.
At 5 o'clock in the afternoon. Now, this book is, I mean, it is a recipe book, but it is very much a narrative of the conversations that you've had and also your own experiences of eating alone, and it is absolutely hilarious. I laughed out loud while reading this book.
That's good to hear.
How did you start? It has the feeling of uncovering of all sorts of secrets and a kind of underground culture of people's very elaborate habits that nobody knows about.
Right. Yeah.
We'll put a sticker on the book that, you know, says underground material or something like that. You know. Okay, I like to, you know, as far as the beginning, this book has been on the back burner for about a decade, you know, and I'd like to at least try to clear up this perception that Deborah wrote it and I illustrated it.
Okay.
You know, I actually did the initial writing by and research, interviews and so on, and I have, you know, a dozen or more little notebooks from, you know, our trips to Europe and just around town, of course. And then Deborah kind of challenged me to get these this material in action, and so then I started the illustrations, and she jumped into the writing. She's the skilled writer, and she
But the research was this thing that, I mean, I never thought of asking anybody. I know what I eat when I eat alone, but you actually went around and asked people this question.
We were on food trips in Europe, and Patrick isn't really so much a foodie type. You know, he's got his other agendas. So I think Patrick often amused himself by asking all these chefs and food writers, what do you eat when you eat alone? With no intention of turning it into anything or making a book, but when I found these notes, they were so funny and so interesting and so completely unexpected. I said, we have to do this sometime. I think it would really be a fun book to do.
And I have to say, I totally understand that it's a collaboration and that you did, you know, a lot of the writing. The
I've
illustrations are brilliant. They
Thank
are
you.
So great. They're so
Thanks.
Funny.
I wanted to ask you a question.
Uh-oh.
You know, do you eat alone sometimes?
Yes.
Yeah, that's a very nice looking.
Everybody does.
Sure, that's the idea, you know. But
are you asking about these oily stains on?
Well,
my
it's a very nice shirt, but yeah.
They do. Yes, I will reveal the truth about these two oily stain spots on my very nice green shirt, which is that actually, while reading your book, there's a chapter on sardines and canned fish and things like that. I opened, completely inspired by the book, a can of smoked oysters and just ate it without anything else. And it was so good.
They are good, aren't they?
They really are. And so are sardines, and so are anchovies wrapping up capers.
Mm-hmm.
But let's go back to this whole question of people eating alone. I mean, you two are a married couple, but you both have experiences of eating alone in our busy lives. We don't always eat with each other.
We actually eat alone a couple of times a week because Patrick stays at his studio at least twice during
and
the week.
So what do you, acclaimed chef, eat when you're alone?
I seesaw and go back and forth on this and that. I don't really enjoy eating alone. At the end of the day, I've been writing alone all day, so I really want conversation. So often I'll invite someone for dinner and then cook a meal. If it's myself, I have to admit, I do a bit of foraging, you know, through the refrigerator to see if there's something that's already there, either to eat or to start from. And then there are also days when I feel like, oh, it would really be a relief to go in the kitchen and cook and bake myself a nice meal and sit down and have a glass of wine and maybe read a book. So,
well, one of the things that's so interesting and I think really inspiring about your book that goes far beyond opening a can of smoked oysters is that even with just the leftovers and stuff in the refrigerator, you can make really good and creative things.
You can, but not everybody likes leftovers. Yeah, some people say, oh, they love leftovers. They'll prepare food in order to have leftovers. Other people say, I don't ever eat leftovers. I never take food home from a restaurant. If I'm done with something, I throw it out. So, you know, people divide themselves, you know, into kind of categories of behavior, what they will do, what they won't do.
Well, those who do.
And they love to tell you, though, whether it's something, how they eat as a kind of, you know, unusual way or usual place, or what they eat. They just want to tell you. It is a confessional.
It really is. I mean, there's this wonderful page called Five Bad Ideas.
Now, we didn't make recipes for the bad ideas.
The recipe, there are no recipe pages for the bad ideas, but there are things like mustard sandwich with reworked coffee. Reworked coffee is where you pour water over the old coffee grounds from yesterday.
Yeah.
Somebody ate that.
Actually, somebody we know.
And then there's potato sesame bread with tequila mix. I mean, it's unbelievable. But then there are also some very funny passages. There's one called some of the odd things that people confess to eating. Saltines crumbled in milk.
Mm-hmm.
Oyster crackers or matzah in coffee. Some of these things sound like stuff they ate when they were young or when they were in college.
Actually, I was just speaking to somebody about this passage in the book, and they said when they were growing up in their family, they often ate saltines crumbled into milk, and it was because they were poor. And they didn't see it. I mean, as a child, he didn't see it as poverty food. He didn't know any better, but it was just something that was delicious and good to eat. So there you go.
And that's the comfort food. I mean, somebody else left home and didn't eat what his mother made him for many years, but then after 50 years of being out of his parents' house, started making fried Spam with grape jelly or something like that.
Right, and this is a very sophisticated eater at other times, most of the time.
And also people, you know, we ran into people that make very elaborate meals for themselves. And one was a roll stuffed flank steak.
Is that the bartender flank
yes.
steak?
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
That looks like it's so great because it has cheese and bacon.
Yeah, it's very evil, but it's great.
It's actually not so hard. We also threw in chopped mushrooms and spinach. It's quite delicious.
Right, so it covers the food groups.
Yeah, really.
Now, we're talking to Deborah Madison and Patrick McFarlane about their new book, What We Eat When We Eat Alone. This whole question, there's a chapter called Men and Their Meat. Is there a gender gap in what men and women eat when they eat alone?
Yes, there's another chapter called The Gestalt of Eating, and that's kind of where we cover that idea. And I had an experience in the New York School of Visual Arts in a workshop by Milton Glaser, and he gave it as an assignment before the workshop, write down what you eat, the times you eat it, and the quantities for a week, and bring that to this workshop. And then that culminated in him taking all these menus or logs of food and handing them back out to everybody. It's like 35 professionals there, and took the name off. And then the assignment was read this log of food and read it again until you have an image of this person.
Oh, how interesting.
And then make a portrait and then write a little synopsis of a typical day of this person. Well, the first time through, there's no doubt about the gender. There is no doubt.
Really? So how does that work?
Well, a woman will eat a chili dog, but a man will eat a chili dog four times a week. A man will eat chicken and have a white wine with it, but a woman will do that four times a week. And so a lot of it, at the time I was eating kind of girly food myself. I was eating a lot of salads and yogurts and stuff like that. But the tip-off was, now, this is the times and the quantities You know, like he got to this place, he's reading it out loud to the class, sip of scotch.
Swig of scotch.
Swig of scotch. Swig of scotch, you know, and the times, you know, 4 minutes apart, you know, so that's not a woman, you know.
Right.
Yeah, and so he called my particular log a virtual war of food and drink.
But men and women do tend to fall into different categories, you know, that, as Patrick mentioned, men will often just eat the same thing over and over, be pretty happy with that. Women tend to have a little bit more variation, for sure. I think we found
interesting
that
with some exceptions.
There's always this pesky exception, you know. You think you've got it worked out, and here's
right.
the theory, and then you find a man who's doing something that's very very much like what a woman would do, or vice versa. So you know, you can never say yes, it's always this way, but you can get a sense, you can tell.
But if you have somebody who's making fried poached eggs and then pouring an extra helping of bacon grease over them, well, of course I would do that.
Ah, there you go. But you might not do it every day.
That's true. So do people eat more or less nutritious food when they're alone? Can you make any generalizations about that?
Gosh, there was so little that came up about nutrition. It's interesting. Some people said that they found that they ate less particularly married people with kids, with families, when they were alone, they tended to eat less. I think because there wasn't the conversation there that sometimes extends a meal.
Right.
You know, and that if it were prolonged, they even lost weight. So there was, but nutrition didn't come up so much except in terms of an opportunity to abuse, you know.
Well, there's another section that I wanted to read aloud. Oh, a friend of yours who is a Quaker cowboy artist, and as you call him, master of gutsy male cooking with an eye on fat, meaning what? Not quite as fatty.
Right. Keeping his eye on it, you know, keeping a watch.
So here's a quotation from this man: buy ground sirloin; it's low in fat. Throw it in the pot without any oil, but add a little beer. Brown. It's things like that you would never find in a regular cookbook.
Right.
And men also throw, stick, you know.
Slam.
So, you know, where, you know, Deborah, she lays it in. I mean, she, you know, that's the way they describe it, you know.
Right.
I stick it in a pot of boiling water, you know, and I slam it in the skillet. And what did he say? You know, anyway.
Yeah,
Throw in some beer.
Yeah. And then he, you know, has a number of things in there. You take the beans, you throw them right in, and don't drain them. You put them in right out of the can. Put in cinnamon, brown sugar, the whole thing. It's a chili con carne that takes a half an hour from start to finish.
Yeah, that's his recipe. We didn't do anything with it.
And so you not only collected these stories, but collected the recipes.
Well, what I did is when something sounded like it could really work, that it might be interesting, is I would make it and you know, and see if we liked it and put it in. So
and make it better.
And sometimes make it better or make it read more as a recipe. One example that I'm thinking of that will sound odd probably to our listeners, but a friend of mine said, "Oh, when I'm alone, the German in me comes out. Here's what I like. I like mashed potatoes with caramelized onions, pickled herring, and sour cream." And I thought that sounded kind of good.
It does
sound
good.
I made it, and I thought it was delicious, you know, with the vinegary fish and the rich, oily, caramelized onions and the potatoes and the cream melting over it. And now Patrick, who doesn't like cold fish or canned fish, wouldn't even thinking that was good. But I thought it was a pretty delicious dish, so I made it into a recipe and put it in. Or a Greek friend of ours, who is actually a cook, said she loves to fry potatoes, thick potatoes, in olive oil. And then she serves them with a yogurt sauce, with Greek yogurt that's been mixed with enough mustard to make it kind of ugly. You know? You're very free to use other adjectives besides beautiful, golden, you know.
Right.
And it's kind of ugly-looking sauce, and we did that. And, of course, it's delicious. Who wouldn't like fried potatoes with a feta yogurt mustard sauce? You know?
Well, that's another thing, is that aesthetics, when you're eating by yourself, pretty much go out the window.
Yeah. I'm thinking there's Daniel Halpern. Except for Daniel Halpern, who has a beautiful poem in there called How to Eat Alone.
Right.
And
he does it on a grand scale, and that's why I gave that kind of from above illustration of him holding a glass to himself after making a roast and opening two bottles of wine and doing the whole schmear, you know.
Now, some of the things that are, again, from the list of people's confessions that didn't make it into the recipe section are things like leftover spaghetti that's stuck together fried with Swiss cheese.
Yeah, and you know we all love that.
It sounds good.
But you can't confess.
Well, and it turns out that the addition to almost anything of cheese and or bacon or other saturated animal fats makes almost anything pretty good.
Yeah, in fact, we have a friend in there who's a wonderful cook named Clifford Wright. And so he's always testing recipes for his cookbook. And he said, well, sometimes I throw everything in my Tupperwares together, and then I taste it. And if it needs something more, I add. And he says, what does he say, bacon, cheese, butter, cream, you know, prosciutto, pancetta. He doesn't say this or that. He just kind of has a list of fatty animal foods. Of course they're going to make it better.
Exactly. Now, another feature of this book, which I found very interesting, getting back to the conversation about leftovers, is that food that doesn't get eaten and that goes into the trash actually accounts for a significant share of global warming.
Yeah, and yeah.
It changed my life.
It did.
Yeah, it really did. You know, I never thought about it, you know. And so I read this little article, and it's an enormous quantity of food is thrown into the trash, and it's a huge problem. I don't have the book
no,
open
there's
to that page, but you know the
yeah. there's
the
numbers on it, but it's as big or bigger a problem than packaging waste, which is a huge problem.
And that's a problem too. And of course, the whole idea of wasting so much food is so, I think, upsetting in a world where, I mean, you know, there's really not a good distribution. There's not enough to go around, and a lot of wasting is just, oh, you didn't think about cooking, you bought too much at the beginning of the week, and, you know, it's a kind of, we're too busy, something came up, we ate out, it's that kind of thing.
Well, and so that gets back into this whole creative thing that people do, which is they take things that are in their refrigerators about to go bad, and one of your people who was in this book who was involved in Zen Buddhism would actually buy the most tired-looking, sad, about-to-go-bad vegetables.
Oh, yeah.
And use them, but it's sometimes one person would take the old chutneys and half-open jellies and those things that are inside the door of your refrigerator that every 5 years you throw away, and use them.
Yeah, and we've got a picture of that in the book. You know, you know, a squash with a walker and a you know a big
exactly.
old carrot in a wheelchair.
Right. I have to say the illustrations are just worth the price of the book. But but it's hilarious. There's another section on, and this isn't exactly about eating alone. It's seduction dishes.
Oh yes,
how to seduce a potential mate with food.
Yes. Well, it happens. We may eat alone, but we may not always want to. We might want to involve somebody else in our life, in which case, you know, food plays an entirely different role. And it's quite amazing that people who aren't really able to come up with much for themselves when they're alone can suddenly come up with a menu, you know. But as our good friend Peggy Knickerbocker says, she says, men, you need more than one dish together in the sack and a bagel the next morning. You need many dishes and for the same woman. And in other words, you need to be a human who cooks and is involved with food in some way.
And has a vocabulary.
That has a vocabulary. Thank you. And she points out, and I agree with her, that men look very dashing in the kitchen, you know, when they know what to do and they're pulling something together. And, you know, I think it's very appealing to a woman. So.
And they're more likely to be successful, I think, in the short and long term of that relationship if they are doing their share of cooking and other kinds of domestic activities.
Yeah.
What do you think about that, Patrick?
Well, I think it's major points if you can, yeah, if you can show off a little cooking skills, you know.
Of course, if you're married to a cook, maybe it's a little different.
Well, yeah, I'll learn a lot from osmosis, you know, just watching it happen and being around it, for sure. And a lot of other skilled culinary people.
There are also, I would say, kind of blurred boundaries between breakfast, lunch, and dinner when you're eating alone.
Mm-hmm, definitely. It's a good idea, actually, to blur those boundaries. I mean, you don't have to be alone to have breakfast for supper. I think a lot of people like that. I think it's a good alternative to much of what we eat. It's comforting, it's knowledgeable, it's often wholesome, it's simple, it's delicious, and all that. But what I really found interesting was that women who have families who suddenly find themselves on a little furlough, you know, where there's no one to cook for, breakfast for dinner, oatmeal with fleur de sel, that's just fine.
Yep.
You know, they are used to like doing whole meals and menus and cleaning up, and to be able to have a bowl of scotch oats with some salt on it might just, as one person said, it's basically about comforting carbs and salt.
I have, going the other way, I have often here in the Santa Fe Baking Company had a Reuben sandwich for breakfast at 9 a.m.
Yeah.
And it's very good at 9 a.m.
Yeah.
It's good anytime, isn't it?
I have to just put in my own little example. The very worst meal that you eat alone that I've ever seen was this, back in the day, I knew this frat boy at MIT who ate Frosted Flakes with 7-Up instead of milk.
Ooh, yes, that would be under the category of bad ideas.
I thought you were going to make a confession of your own, though, not...
I ate a lot of sandwiches and a lot of crackers and things like that, but I have to say my favorite meal to eat that I make myself when I eat alone is rice with fried eggs, bacon, and fried bananas.
Oh, my gosh.
It's really easy, it's really fast, and it's really good, and it fills you right up.
Well, there you go.
What's yours?
My favorite eat-alone meal? I don't have a favorite, you know? I really don't. But what I would tend to do, I guess I do have a favorite. I would sauté broccoli raw and have it on toast with a nice big shaving of Parmesan cheese or a goat howdah or some, you know, nice, really pungent cheese on top. I love vegetables on toast. It could be anything, but since you're asking me favorites, I'd say it would have to be broccoli raw.
What about you, Patrick?
Well, I make a panini, you know, with steamed spinach and cheese. Of course, you got to have some cheese melting in there. And
now, panini, that's the Italian word for sandwich,
yeah,
but it's a special kind of...
Yes, it's a cooked sandwich, and it's grilled from both sides in a little panini maker. And it takes a sandwich and makes it, you know, hot and delicious, and another dimension, almost like your... It could feel like your Reuben sandwich, you know, almost anything, you know, or mushrooms, or, you know...
Or pimento cheese.
Or pimento cheese. My mother used to make pimento cheese, and Deborah was amazed to find out there such a thing exists.
Now, toast plays a big role, and lots of little hints pop up throughout the book, which I thought were really useful, like what kinds of bread are the best to freeze. So
oh, yeah.
If you need that sandwich in the middle of the night or at some point, you could just go to your frozen bread.
Well, that was Marty. That was Marty who accidentally bought like 5 pounds of Velveeta cheese for a party and also had a lot of frozen bread in the freezer. So I'm actually personally not an expert on frozen bread, but he seemed to think that whole wheat did better than others.
So the book is called What We Eat When We Eat Alone, Stories and 100 Recipes, and they're really wonderful, inspiring recipes. I mean, I think one of the hard things about working with a cookbook when you're cooking for one is that you have to somehow divide the recipe by 6 or something like that. It doesn't always work very well.
It doesn't. In fact, some people were kind of, that I talked to, were almost irate at the idea of cooking for themselves. I remember one woman said, well, what am I going to do? Divide a carrot in half? What do I do with the other half of the carrot? Like, you expect me to deal with this? And I said, well, if you're a food person, you'll just eat it, you know. but for some people, they don't want that leftover half a carrot. They're very literal about recipes. But some of these allow for leftovers. Some are really tailored to one person. It's true.
So Deborah Madison and Patrick McFarlane will be in Garcia Street Books on Friday, this coming Friday, at 5 o'clock in the afternoon. And a wonderful book with wonderful illustrations. Deborah Madison and Patrick McFarlane, thanks so much for being with us here on the Santa Fe Radio Cafe.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
We're going to take a break right now. We'll be back in a moment. Stay tuned to KSFR.